I think I may comment on it, but that.
Well, what these represent, I'll talk about what these represent a little bit later on. It's a young bullock and a ram for an offering here, sin offering and a burnt offering. Now, sin offering is an offering for sin and cleansing. A burnt offering is a worship offering. Then in verse 4, here's a key for us to understand what Aaron really was representing as he went in here. It also is a figure, because the book of Hebrews makes it clear that Aaron, as he went in there, was also a foreshadowing of Jesus going in. We now have a high priest that is not made with hands and all the rest of it. He shall put on the linen coat, and he shall have the linen breeches upon his flesh, be girded with a linen girdle, linen mitre upon his head shall be attired with their holy garments. He shall wash his flesh in water and put them on. I want to make note that these are not the garments of glory and beauty as are laid out in Exodus 28. That's when he had the blue robe and the ephod and the mitre and all the rest. He did not wear these things when he went in behind the veil on the Day of Atonement. Everything that he wore was linen. Now, the reason that everything was linen is because linen produces no perspiration, no sweat. And remember that this particular Day of Atonement is a day in which no work is to be done at all. On the other feast days, no servile work was to be done. But on this particular day, no work was to be done at all. And so Aaron was dressed completely in white. He was in stark contrast with the sin that was all around him. And he was totally white, from the mitre that was all on his head, which is kind of a hat, looked like a baker's hat, and gone down through the white robe that hung down to his feet. He was dressed completely in white, dressed completely in linen, signifying here that what he was doing, although there was going to be labor involved, it was not his labor. It was not his work. It was producing no sweat and no effort on his part. This is why the scripture speaks also in the Old Testament about some of the garments not to be mingled with linen and woolen, because the wool produces sweat, the linen doesn't, so that causes a mixture before the Lord. And so here he is completely dressed in linen. He says he'll pick of the congregation. Now in verse 5, this is a different offering. There are going to be several aspects of these offerings. He says in verse 5, he'll take of the congregation of the children of Israel two kids of the goat for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. Now these two goats are one offering, but the one offering is going to have two aspects. And the goats that are going to be offered on this particular day are going to be showing two aspects of a singular offering, because it's two goats for a sin offering, one offering, and yet it's going to have two dimensions and two applications. Verse 6, he shall offer his bullock for the sin offering which is for himself, and make atonement for himself and for his house. Now his house speaks of the priesthood. It literally means the house of Aaron. The first thing that needs to be sanctified and the first thing that needs to be reinstated in proper standing before God is the priesthood. As I said earlier, that's why God deals with his ministry. He deals with the ministry first, if they have an ear to hear. Then he'll deal with the congregation. If the ministry does not have an ear to hear, sometimes in his mercy and in his grace, he bypasses that and meets the heart's cry of the individuals in that congregation. But his desire and his purpose is always to deal with the ministry, so then through that ministry, he might have a cleansed expression to deal with the rest of the church. Then what they do is and I'll go into the offering of these in just a minute when he actually gets to it. He's just saying what he's going to do here. He brings the two goats to him that they chose from the congregation. These goats, of course, would be without spot or blemish. They're young kid goats. They're brought to Aaron, and they kind of draw lots for them. And the one goat is the lot is the one that goes to the Lord. He's going to be offered up. The other one's going to be a scapegoat. And so they take the scapegoat off to the side, and they hold him off there until they're ready for him. And the other one is held over in another little area until it's time for him to be offered. And then it says, this goat that is alive, the goat that's going to be for a scapegoat, shall be presented alive before the Lord, and he is going to make an atonement with him and let him go for a scapegoat in the wilderness. He is going to go out into the wilderness. There's going to be a fit man. Take this goat out into the wilderness, and he's going to let him go out there. Well, now we're going to get into actual, and verse 11 is where we're going to start with the actual ceremony itself. So Aaron shall bring the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and shall make an atonement for himself and for his house, and shall kill the bullock of the sin offering which is for himself. Now what Aaron would do, what they literally did in these days, is they brought the goat up here, or sorry, the bull here in this particular case. Aaron puts his hands on the bull's head, and he begins to acknowledge his sin and begins to confess his sin over the head of that substitutionary offering. And what he was actually doing is saying that just as this bull is, that's how I am. Therefore, it was a particular offering for a particular need. Just as this bull is young, and just as this bull is ambitious and has a lot of wild, undisciplined strength, that's the way I am. That's the way the priesthood is. That's why my sons went in there and offered strange fire on the day of their dedication. They were not harnessed in the Lord. They were not disciplined. And just like a young bull is always ambitious and always raring to go and always wanting to get out and charge around here and charge around, that's the way ministry is, especially when they first get anointed to serve in God. That has to then be put upon the altar. And so Aaron is here. He's got his hands on his bull's head, and he's confessing his sins over him. And what he's actually doing is he's imputing his sin to a substitute, because he can't take his own life and offer it to God. It's not acceptable. And so he has a substitutionary offering that he is going to offer after he has confessed all the sins that he knows and is aware of. He cuts the bull's throat. Now when they do that, they catch the blood in a little vial-like affair, because that blood is going to have to go through the veil into the very presence of God and meet God in the mercy seat if Israel is going to live and if Aaron is going to live. Now we could just kind of allow ourselves to get an understanding of what was going on in Israel for the 9 days of the seventh month. All of Israel was anticipating this day, because they were looking now for a day in which they would be actually cleansed from sin completely as a nation, have right standing with God. Everything was going to depend upon Aaron being able to get through the veil into the presence of God and live. If Aaron didn't live going through the presence of through the veil and getting into the presence of God, the whole nation of Israel was totally without hope. And so there was a lot of, that's why it was a day of fasting that brought the nation together into one mind, into one spirit, into one accord, as they were waiting on the solemnity of this day for Aaron to go through the rituals necessary in order to come into the very presence of God and live. Because you can't just run into the presence of God any old way and live. Even today, unless we're a sinner, we're calling for grace and mercy. And then we come through Jesus Christ. You see, none of us have really ever yet completely gotten into the presence of God. We come in Jesus. Right? We come in Jesus. But there's coming a day when we're going to stand before Him in the very presence of God. That's going to be an awesome day. An awesome day. We won't be running up there clicking our heels and whistling Dixie along the way. It's an awesome day. Well, the people, there was a hush that was falling upon the whole camp, because they knew what was going on. If Aaron didn't live, they were all dead in their trespasses and sins. And so he has confessed that. He has then imputed his sin to that substitutionary offering. And then because that nature of that sin must die in order for him to be acceptable before God, he had to get rid of it. And he couldn't get rid of it himself before God. There had to be a substitute. And then that offering was killed and the blood was caught. And the rest of the priests were going to start dealing with the offering and take care of it a little bit later as to see what was going to be done. So after he does that now, he says he shall take in verse 12 a censer full of burning coals of fire from off the altar before the Lord, and his hands full of sweet incense beaten small, and shall bring it within the veil. Now after he has confessed his sins on the bull, on the head of this bull, he now goes and takes a little golden censer, the little pot that has a little chain on it, and he takes the tongs and he takes all the fire off the altar of incense and puts the fire from the altar of incense into this little censer. And then he hangs this little censer kind of around his wrist sort of thing, and he's going to take this censer with both hands full of incense behind the veil. Now the reason is, you see, the altar of incense is the only piece of furniture that symbolically moves in the tabernacle. This is why when you find, if we look quickly, hold your place here, let's look quickly over in Hebrews, the 9th chapter, and I'll show you where this incense moves. Let's read from verse 1. Then verily the first covenant had also ordinances of divine service in a worldly or earthly sanctuary. For there was a tabernacle made first, and therein was the candlestick. And he's talking about the tabernacle proper now. Wherein was the candlestick and the table and the showbread, which is called the sanctuary. And after the second, now he's talking about the Day of Atonement here in this whole setting, and this is why it's worded this way. And after the second, they held the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, which had the golden censer and the ark of the covenant overlaid round about with his gold, wherein was a golden pot that had manna, and Aaron's rod that budded, and tables of the covenant, and the cherubims of glory that were above that. Now you see, the fire was taken off of the altar of incense on the Day of Atonement for a specific purpose, and was carried into the very presence of God. The reason the fire was taken off of the altar of incense, because that was the place where it had been polluted, where the sanctuary had been polluted and where the priesthood had been polluted. And so there had to be a specific and unique offering and cleansing made for that a little bit later on. But there was another reason for it as well. Because the incense, in the scriptures, we looked at this earlier, I think, the incense that wafted into the very presence of God, the holiest of all, was symbolic of the prayer and the praise and the worship of the saints. It was continually to be there. And so Aaron now, he takes this incense from off the fire, off the altar, puts it in the censer, and then he gets both hands full of incense. He's got his hands filled with incense, this kind of pot thing sort of hanging here at the same time, and he is going to need to take that into the presence of God behind the veil. And he says in verse 13, he shall put the incense upon the fire before the Lord, that the cloud of the incense may cover the mercy seat, which is upon the testimony, that he die not. Again, this needs to be very explicitly followed if Aaron is not going to be a statistic. But there's holiness inside that veil. Now, we sometimes can't identify with this because, you know, we're not used to this sort of thing. But if we had a curtain drawn here this morning, and we knew that the very presence of God, I mean, absolute holiness was in beyond that curtain, you wouldn't just go up there and brush that curtain aside and go hustling in there. Because if you step through there unworthy and unclean, you were a dead man. A dead man. And Aaron had the responsibility of all of Israel upon him this particular day as he was going to go through the veil. I believe personally the first time through the veil was going to be the toughest, was going to be the hardest. Because if he once got through the first time, he knew he was acceptable in there. But when he brought the blood in, he had to also find out whether those offerings were going to be acceptable. And so I can just see a holy hush that just kind of fell over the whole camp. Everything was still. Nobody was singing. Nobody was shouting. Nobody was doing everything. Everybody was just kind of holding their breath. Especially when they saw Aaron start after he killed his bull, and when he started heading back into the holy place and knew he was headed for the veil. He had his hands full of incense, prayers, and worship. Now the reason he could fill his hands with incense is because he had just emptied them of sin. When he put his hands on the bull, he emptied his hands of all the sin that he was responsible and guilty of. And now because his hands were emptied of sin, they could now be filled with prayer and worship and praise. That he might then take that into the very presence of God himself. Now when he went in through the veil, because of the awesome glory that was there, the first thing he had to do was get that censer in there and put the incense on it so that when the smoke then would rise up above that, it would be kind of a curtain, a veil between him and God. And it was in that place that God was going to meet him. It says here that he die not. It's supposed to be a cloud of incense might cover the mercy seat that is upon the testimony that he die not. And so he's ready. He starts for the veil. And I can just imagine as he was there, he paused before he stepped through the veil and just kind of perhaps rehearsed it, did I forget anything? I've been washed, I've been here in the tabernacle for 7 days. I haven't gone outside of the tabernacle, I've been washed, every piece of me has been washed, I've got the right clothes on, I've got everything right, that everything's been confessed, I didn't forget to confess anything, everything is just right, my hands are clean of sins, and I'll pull it into them. I'm as ready as I'm going to get. And he just kind of, that veil is pretty heavy. He pushes that veil aside, and as he pushes that veil aside, he steps through, sets the censer down, and fills it with incense upon that the fire that was there on the altar of incense. And the smoke begins to go up across the mercy seat. He backs out. He lives. Now because he lives, all of Israel now has the opportunity to have their sins nationally forgiven for one day. The priesthood now has the opportunity to be cleansed from the pollution that came upon them because of offering strange fire. And there is still a lot of strange fire being offered today. And it's polluting the sanctuary, and it pollutes the priesthood just as much as it ever did, and it must be atoned for. And so he comes out of there, and he may even breathe a bit of a sigh of relief. He's got three more trips behind that veil before the day is over. And I can just, you know, you can just kind of, if you just kind of imagine yourself or kind of picture yourself in the camp of Israel, just being there. Now everything depended upon that one man making it. Everybody's practically holding their breath. Did he live? Well, he comes back out, and you can just kind of feel a sigh of relief going through the entire camp as he steps back out into sight. He lived. He's been in once. But now in the holy place, there is no fire on the altar of incense. That fire has moved beyond the veil as in the very presence of God. That's significant. You see, it is only praise, worship, prayer that take us actually through the veil. That's the first thing that has to go through. That's why it's so important to learn to pray effectively. That's why it's so important to learn to enter into his gates with praise and into his courts with thanksgiving. That is what actually causes us to go out of the realm of contamination, and that's what's acceptable to go into the very presence of holy and awesome and almighty God. And so Aaron fulfills this on this particular day. Jesus said when he was here in Hebrews 5 and 7, in the days of his flesh, he offered strong prayers with crying, with tears and supplication, and was heard in that he feared. He feared God. He kept himself in that harness, and he was heard in that place. Well, he's made it in first time through the veil. He comes back out in verse 14. He says now that the way is open for him. You see, Aaron now can go in. But that's, he still has who knows how many people out there, upwards of a couple of million people probably out there that still have to have an atonement made for them as well as the rest of the house, the priesthood. And he tells, take of the blood of the bullock and sprinkle it upon his finger upon the mercy seat eastward on the east side of it. And before the mercy seat shall he sprinkle of the blood of his finger seven times. He goes back outside and gets the blood. Now that's in this kind of a chalice sort of thing, or a vase or a vase or whatever you call it around here. It's full of blood, and he's not going to go back through the veil once again, because now he's going to find out whether the offering that has been offered is going to be acceptable. Because when that blood hits the mercy seat, and if that blood is not acceptable, the priesthood is dead. Aaron has been accepted because of his own clean hands. But when that blood for the priesthood, if it's not acceptable, the priesthood is dead before the Lord and dead before the people. And so once again, he starts for the veil with this container of blood. Again, I can just kind of imagine he would probably pause just for a moment and wait and say, no, I can't remember anything. Everything is clear. Nothing has been forgotten that he can think of. He steps through the veil, dips his finger in the blood, and when he does, he sprinkles it on the mercy seat, which is through the cloud before him, between him and God. When that blood hits the mercy seat and he lives and the priesthood lives, atonement has been made. He just sprinkles on the mercy seat like that with his finger. Dips it in and sprinkles on the mercy seat. It touches that golden mercy seat there. Then when he has done that, he says he shall sprinkle it before the mercy seat seven times. So seven times he sprinkles it between him and mercy on the ground. Seven times he does it that way. Sprinkles on it. Now seven we know is the number of perfection. The reason that he does that is he is showing us that there are seven steps, there are seven dimensions of going from the outer court into the very presence of God, and each step is in the blood. And the way is opened up by the blood in order to achieve that and to get into there. These seven steps are typified through the study that we've been doing on these feasts, on the seven pieces of furniture. They're also seen in the seven letters of Revelation to this, the promises of the overcomer, the seven steps that are, you can see them in the steps of Abraham, the life of Abraham. There are seven steps that went up to Solomon's throne. There's a lot of places that there are seven. Each one of them are typical here because of seven times the blood was sprinkled, and each one is cleansed, each step and each station, if you please, is cleansed as it goes on into the very presence of God. When he does that, he turns around and backs out of the holiest of all again, goes back, sets his container of blood to the side, and then he goes out and gets the goat that is for the people. It says in verse 15, he shall kill the goat of the sin offering that is for the people, and shall bring his blood within the veil, and shall do the same with his blood as he did with the blood of the bullock, and sprinkle it upon the mercy seat before the mercy seat. He goes and gets the goat that is for the people, the congregation. The elders gather around now from the people. All the elders gather around, and they begin to put their hands upon them. Those that can't get their hands on the goat's head, put their hands on one another, and so that there's an imparting, an imputing of all the sin that's there. And they begin to confess their sin upon the head of this goat. And when that's all done, you can just kind of hear the monotone drone of sin being confessed, and sin being confessed, and being brought out and exposed, and share what's in the hearts of the people, because they've been talking with the people. They know what's been going on. And they confess it, and it all rolls out. You can roll out. And finally, when it's all done, and that goat is now loaded with the sins of the people, Aaron cuts his throat and catches the blood in another container. Because this is not going to need to make an offering, a substitutionary offering for the people. And so he does the same thing. The people are now I just imagine they're absolutely quiet. Nobody's moving. Nobody's barely breathing. Are we going to be acceptable in God's sight? Everything hinges upon that blood of that goat going through that veil and touching that mercy seat. And in a sense, when that goat, the blood has touched the mercy seat, they have obtained mercy as a people, as a nation. It's a solemn day. It's a solemn day. So they wait as Aaron makes his trek toward the veil once again from outside where he can be seen in the court, goes in through the holy place, no fire on the altar of incense. The fire is burning there on the candlestick. The bread is there on the table of showbread, but the altar of incense is strangely silent because the fire of the incense is beyond the veil. It's on the inside burning and making a covenant for him between him and God. He goes up to the veil with his container of blood, pauses again, opens the veil and steps through, dips his finger in and sprinkles the mercy seat the same way he did with the blood of the bull for an atonement for himself. Does the same thing seven times on the ground before him and also on the mercy seat, again signifying now not only is the way open for him and the priesthood, but now mercy has been extended and there's an opening there for the people to come into the very presence of God. Now before we go further in this, I'd like to just examine a couple of things here, kind of correlate this with the life of Jesus, and then ask ourselves a few questions and all. Most of the time when we think of the atonement here, we think only in terms of Jesus having fulfilled it. But I would just like to ask you something. The offerings that are offered here are a bull, goats, and rams, or a ram for a burnt offering, not for a sin offering. Jesus was called in the New Testament the Lamb of God. Now I would ask the question, where is the Lamb in all of this? If Jesus was the Lamb, and there is no Lamb offered on this day, excepting a ram for a burnt offering, which is a worship offering, and Jesus was offered for sin as a Lamb, where then is the Lamb on this particular day of atonement if it was all fulfilled in Jesus? Well, there has to be a lamb to go into the presence of God. There has to be an offering. There has to be a substitute. There has to be a sacrifice. And so when you consider very carefully, Aaron, in a very real sense, was the lamb that went in. Because you see, God, when Aaron put on the linen garments, the white linen garments, he had an imputed righteousness. And so when he went in, imputed righteousness, what we saw in Revelation 19 that says about the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints. And so he had an imputed righteousness. And when he went through the veil on that particular day, God had imputed a righteousness to him. But when he went in there and the blood was accepted, the offering was accepted, then he had an established righteousness for that particular day. The reason that the blood of a bull and the blood of a goat were taken in is because of what they represent. A bull is strong, as I mentioned earlier. A young bull is a strong, ambitious animal. The ambitious strength. God is saying that all ambitious strength, all ambitious desires, all of your own bullish abilities and strength